The 1920s and 30s was an era of glitz, glamour, and speakeasies. There was a general feeling of affluence and abundance. However, this was only true for a select few. Others had to scrimp or save, whilst others resorted to criminality to make ends meet. Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I'm Steve, your host. And yet again, we delve into that murky mind of Cat's True Crime Corner. And it's another story that I had on my very long list. And I'm so glad that Cat's written it up. This is the story of the bobbed-haired bandit. Celia Cooney was born in 1904 in New York City. She was the youngest child of a large family living in a basement apartment of a run-down building. Celia and her siblings were often left neglected by her parents, her mother working long hours trying to pay the bills, although her father usually drank away the salary before it could be used on the children. As such, they were often sent out onto the streets by their parents to beg for change. Celia was eventually placed in the care of her aunt. Neighbours of the Cooney family were appalled when they found out that little Celia had been left alone for 3 days with no food by her mother. And whilst living with her aunt, Celia was often visited by her mother, but the visits didn't go well. Celia's mother would take the clothes off Celia's back and the toys out of her hand with the intention to resell the pretty clothing and new toys, and Celia would return to her aunt in rags. By the time Celia was 14, she'd dropped out of school. She desperately craved her independence, deciding that the only person she could rely on was herself. She got a job working in a brush factory and moved out of her aunt's house to move in with her sister. She'd a bit more freedom, but also a taste of adult-like responsibility. Celia had stability on her own terms. However, Celia developed a few unsavoury habits. She took to stealing small, almost unnoticeable trinkets wherever she went, and she enjoyed the company of men, especially sailors. And thus, Celia's behaviour was a source of strife for her sister. They would bicker and argue, with her sister constantly trying to curb her behaviour, and Celia continuously flaunting her newfound independence. Eventually Celia had enough and decided to move out on her own. By 1919, when she was 16, Celia was working in a laundry, and it offered her more independence than she'd ever had before. She enjoyed being on her own, and decided that she didn't need her family at all. By this time, she began telling everybody that her parents were deceased, uncaring whether this was fact or fiction. And a few years later, in 1922, Celia met mechanic Ed Cooney. For Celia, it was love at first sight. She was absolutely smitten with Ed. On 18th of May, 1923, the couple married, and they were happy, renting a small room in what was known then as Bedford. This was in Brooklyn. At the time, the advent of credit was a boom to the capitalist market, and Celia and Ed took advantage of the system, constantly buying things that were outside their budget. Ed wanted Celia to have whatever she wanted, and this included what would be her infamous sealskin fur coat. Celia loved it, telling Ed that the coat made her feel $1 million. As their spending increased, they realised they had an entirely new reason to spend. They had a new life to provide for, as Celia discovered in autumn of 1923 that she was pregnant, and so they started planning. On January the 5th, 1924, Celia entered a Thomas Ralston grocery store, done up in her sealskin coat and her finest clothes. When the clerk asked her if he could give her some assistance, she asked him for a dozen eggs. And as the clerk gathered the eggs, Ed came into the shop and nodded to his wife. As the clerk turned back, Celia took out a .25 automatic pistol from the pocket of her coat and shouted, "Stick him up, quick." She stated later she felt a small thrill as she did it. In the meantime, Ed had the other two staff members lined up at the back of the store and kept two guns pointed at them. The pair then ransacked the cash register, taking $680 as they left. And the following day, the robbery was covered in the Brooklyn Eagle and the Brooklyn Citizen. The robbery had all gone to plan. The couple had intimidated the store staff and made away with a solid take. Despite the use of weapons for intimidation purposes, Celia and Ed had one hardened rule. They would never fire their guns. And with their spoils, the couple moved into a larger apartment with much larger rent, Celia picking out some furniture for their new home. The couple made purchases on credit, deciding to pay in installments. However, there was a problem fast approaching. They were again running out of money. And so, on January the 12th, 1924, they decided they needed to rob another store. However, their ill-gotten gains weren't as substantial as they were hoping. They robbed a second store, and in total, they took home $365 that night. And the following day, the New York Daily News, the Telegram, and the Evening Mail covered the robberies, and they gave Celia her moniker, the bobbed-haired bandit. And the newspapers reported that she and her partner in crime were armed and dangerous. And this tickled Celia Pink. She adored all the media attention. NYPD Police Commissioner Richard Enright was outraged. The news media were generally speaking of him unfavourably, ridiculing him for not being able to catch the bobbed-haired bandit. 2 days following the double robbery, Commissioner Enright had an announcement. He stated he'd caught the bobbed-haired bandit. 23-year-old actress Helen Quigley had been arrested and was being charged for the armed robberies, and she was held until she could make her own $10,000 bond. She declared her innocence to anyone who would listen, and someone was listening. Celia was annoyed that someone was stealing her spotlight, and she came up with a plan. She and Ed were running low on money anyway, and it was time for another robbery. And this time, she would have some choice words for the NYPD. On January the 15th, Celia and Ed drove around Brooklyn, looking for their next mark, as was their habit. Ed would borrow a car from the garage which he worked in order to make an easy getaway. And from the car, the pair found a drugstore. Celia entered and found a clerk and a store manager behind the counter. She put a quarter on the counter and asked for change. And as the men moved around, Ed came into the store, and both he and Celia pulled their guns, holding the men at gunpoint. Celia held them still while Ed went through the counter and the cash register. Finishing her business, the couple left the store, and Celia left a note behind. The note read, "You dirty fish peddling bums, leave this innocent girl alone and get the right ones, which is nobody else but us. We defy you fellas to catch us.
The following day, the note was featured in all the papers, and it enchanted New Yorkers and infuriated the NYPD. One paper even printed a facsimile of the note, allowing gawkers and fawners to catch a glimpse of the bob-haired bandit's handwriting. The note did not help Helen Quigley's plight, though. Her bail was subsequently doubled by an outraged Commissioner Enright. If anything, the police were even more confused. They believed Helen to be the responsible party, but two robberies had occurred the previous night. And with the note being sensationalist on its own, some papers were asking an important question. If Helen Quigley has been held in custody and the note has been left by another bob-haired bandit, then who was the third armed robber? Just how many were there? Essentially, the police couldn't answer these questions, or they didn't want to. Either way, they were made to look foolish by another robbery and by Celia and Ed. On the 20th of January, Celia walked into a drugstore and asked for talcum powder. And as the owner of the store turned to fetch it for it, she pressed a gun to his back. At that point, Ed walked into the store. Ed ransacked the cash register and didn't come away with much. But this didn't matter to Celia. She had an ulterior motive. She left another note at the store, taking a very confrontational tone. "Well, I'm having a fine time with you, Bill," she wrote. "Give it up, boys, because you'll never get me. Because I'll kill you off one by one if you start after me." The next day, news of the robbery and the note hit the newspapers again. The bob-haired bandit was framed as either stark raving mad or the most courageous woman living in Brooklyn. And Celia ate it all up. For every robbery, more and more newspapers picked up the crimes, and she loved reading the tapes on her actions. The bob-haired bandit had become so infamous around New York that tales of her exploits were made into songs, poems, and even vaudeville routines. And this pleased Celia and fed her ego. A couple of days after the January 20th robbery, Celia and Ed ran on a familiar problem. They were running out of money. And then, on January 22nd, Celia walked into a small grocery store and asked for a cake of ivory soap. Then, Ed entered the shop, and Celia pressed the gun between the shopkeeper's ribs. They were startled when a customer came down from the apartments above the shop for some butter, and Ed pointed his gun at the woman's face and ordered her and the shopkeeper to the back. They then fled. On February 3rd, Celia and Ed committed another robbery. Police had been called and missed the couple by mere minutes. And Commissioner Enright was livid. He couldn't fathom how the bob-haired bandit could continue to make an absolute fool out of him and the police force. He would arrest and release suspect after suspect, only for another robbery to take place. And at one point, Zelda Fitzgerald, the wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald, was even accused of being the bob-haired bandit, further humiliating the police force when these wild accusations proved very, very false. Determined to end the bob-haired bandit once and for all, Enright created a task force of 850 detectives whose main objective was to catch the dastardly woman who kept thwarting them at every turn, and yet Celia kept slipping by them. On February 23rd, Celia and Ed robbed a grocery store. Celia walked in, and a manager and two clerks and three customers were all inside the store. This was way more people than she'd ever wrangled before. But she did it. She pulled out her gun and told them all to stick them up and herded them into the back of the store. Ed came in, rifled through the cash register and found only $60, and they fled the scene. Then on March the 5th, a man was held gunpoint on the street. There were no witnesses to the attack, but the man claimed it was the bob-haired bandit and her accomplice. Following this, police were now actively ordered, rather than encouraged, to shoot and kill the bobtailed bandit on sight. However, this attack was not the work of Celia and Ed Cooney. In another part of Brooklyn, the couple were thinking that an empty-seeming drugstore looked promising. However, right across the street was a branch of the National Guard. Not wanting to take their chances, Celia and Ed continued on their way. But in the car, another one borrowed from Ed's place of employment, they began to talk. If they could get away with robbing a drugstore with the National Guard just a few feet away, wouldn't the papers have an absolute field day? And they decided they were up for the challenge. Celia walked into the store while Ed parked the car. She asked the owner for a tube of tooth powder. She then pulled two guns on him while his back was turned. The owner immediately put his hands up. He didn't want trouble. But Celia had other problems. The store had two phone booths, and both were occupied by women talking on the phone. Holding the store owner in place with one gun trained on him, Celia walked towards the phone booths and rapped on the glass with the other gun. The first woman stepped out, frightened, and asked Celia if she was the bald-headed bandit. Celia cut her off and demanded that she goes back to the store where the owner was. And when the second woman saw what was happening, she fainted and slumped to the floor. Ed came in, and Celia indicated him that it was all under control. When the woman came to, Celia ordered her out of the booth and herded her back to the others. Celia was then surprised by a woman appearing from behind a staircase. Celia kept her cool, but was feeling the stress. Ed sped up his actions and made quick work of rifling through the cash register and a small safe behind the counter. They made away with $31. They fled the store, sped off in their borrowed car, mere moments before a stream of National Guardsmen stormed into the store. This latest robbery had truly spooked Celia. She couldn't bring herself to commit any more robberies, especially when they weren't providing her with the results that she had dreamt of. Celia wanted luxury, but their takings were barely able to cover their current bill. They were spending far outside their means, and they knew that time was running out for them. They needed just one more big cake, and they would be set, and they would stop for good. They planned on robbing the payroll office of the National Biscuit Company. It was planned for April the 1st, 1924. Payday. Stacks of cash would be sitting in a safe right for the taking. Stealing their nerves, the couple walked into the building and held up the cashier, Nathan Mazel, and several employees. But Nathan attempted to stop the robbery. In doing so, there was a slight struggle, and for a moment Ed believed that Celia had been injured. Barely aiming, Ed shot his gun at Nathan, trying to protect his wife. And following the shot, Celia and Ed fled the building, leaving behind nearly $8,000. When the incident was investigated, a warehouse employee recognised Ed. Finally, the bob-haired bandit and her accomplice had been identified. On the 3rd of April, 1924, the couple arrived in Jacksonville, Florida, having fled New York on a Clyde Line steamer. They knew they were a subject of a large manhunt and tried to lay as low as possible, maybe even trying to build a new life for themselves. But things were hard, and the couple became increasingly paranoid. On 10th of April, Celia gave birth to their baby, who was in poor health. And 2 days later, tragically, the baby passed away. With her child went Celia's fighting spirit. She was exhausted. She was done. Let chips fall where they may. Having no luck finding the culprits in New York, their identities were revealed to the public on April the 15th. But there was still no sight of Celia or Ed Cooney anywhere. And the police got crafty. They began to intercept Ed's mother's mail, hoping their son would send word of his whereabouts. And it was just their luck that Ed divulged to his mother that he and Celia had moved to Jacksonville, and he'd even included a return address on the envelope. And so, on April the 21st, 1924, Celia and Ed Cooney were arrested for all the robberies they had committed in New York, and they went willingly, without fuss, and they readily confessed to all the robberies. Celia tried to take the responsibility for shooting Nathan Maisel, who had survived, but Ed refused to let her take the fall. When the bob-haired bandit was finally captured, the real bob-haired bandit, it made front-page headlines across multiple newspapers, and thousands of people flocked to the train station when it arrived in New York from Florida. Ed and Celia were represented by a defence attorney who tried to do right by them, but Celia was convinced that if they pleaded guilty, the prosecution would go easy on them. Even though they lived up to their end of the bargain, the prosecution still threw the book at them. And on 6th of May 1924, they were both sentenced to the maximum 10 to 20 years in prison. Celia being sent to Auburn Penitentiary and Ed Sing Sing. In prison, Celia worked in the prison laundry and then as a secretary to the head warden. She became extremely skilled at typing and shorthand, so much so that she began teaching secretarial skills to the other inmates in the prison. A month into their sentences, Ed was transferred from Sing Sing to Auburn, and although unable to see each other, they were comforted by the proximity to each other. Whilst working on a license plate machine, Ed had a few of his fingers crushed, and three had to be removed. Afterwards, infection set into his wounds, resulting in Ed having to amputate half his arm. Following his injuries, Ed was transferred to the medical prison, where he would remain for the remainder of his incarceration, having caught TB. But Ed and Celia wrote to each other constantly. In October of 1931, they were both released from prison, and Ed filed a $100,000 lawsuit against the state of New York due to the loss of his arm. His legal team won the case and granted him the settlement, $12,000. Shortly afterward, Ed and Celia moved to Long Island and put their sordid history long behind them. They proceeded to have two sons and led quiet lives. Ed passed away in 1936. Leaving a heartbroken Celia behind with two young sons. She made things work, however, working as a pipist and later a company that manufactured navigation equipment. And in 1943, she married a man named Harold LaGrange. Celia never spoke about her life pre-Long Island, and it wasn't until her passing in 1992 that her sons learned of her infamy as the bomb-haired bandit. And perhaps Celia inspired another famous robber, Bonnie Parker, whose exploits with Clyde Barrow would make her the most famous female robber in American history, and almost consigning the bomb-haired bandit to forgotten history. Well, that's it for another episode of the Historical Crimes and Criminals podcast. I hope you enjoyed that one. And if you did, don't forget Kat's blog. Thank you to Kat. And till next time, bye-bye.